comments on the conclusion from parties. We now do have them. So the second quarterly report is here with the conclusions. Did you see that? And the intro. We've already been through it, but it's a matter of doing that again. So we're going to start in a minute or two. That'll be about 7 minutes past 11 with the ECIC on its annual report as well as the third quarter financial, etc. And before we consider the minutes, and that, by the way, just to ensure that it sounds like the chairman of the board may be dealing with this, Mr. Dharma Lingam, we will be giving that item until 12:30. Will that be sufficient time for you? You know, right? And then we'll begin with the other. So if you could adjust your agendas accordingly, we may even be finished before that, to be followed by the second quarterly report. All right? And then the minutes. I have to try and conclude at 1300, which I'm sure nobody wants to argue about, because we all would like a full lunch instead of half a lunch. The second thing is a number of members are being called out by their parties for one reason or another. Honorable Esterhazen has already indicated he may be called out at some point. Our whip, the Honorable Hadebe, is not here due to compassionate leave. And I wasn't sure about yourself, Honorable Tierko. Are you here for the whole meeting? Because I know sometimes you call to, is it Labour?
Not today, Chair. I'm available for the whole session.
Great. And I'm glad to see the Honourable Mantash is looking in much better shape, and I do hope fully recovered, as well as the Honourable Williams, who gave us a little bit of a scare, didn't he? But you can see he's back on board. And Honourable Kacharya, but you weren't ill. I mean, you maintain your robust, healthy approach to life. There we are. All right. So I'm trying to see if there are any others. We've got another apology from the Honourable Flanguini, but that is party business. The Honourable Elvis is attending a police meeting, so you know, he just can't be here this morning and gives his apologies. Is there anyone else? No. I have you, right. And then we have got for the DTI in attendance, the DDG TISA, Ms. Lerato Matabohe. Yes, the DDG. It's so good, you know, in the... This is the 10th year that I've chaired trade and industry, to see the changing profile in senior management, both in race and gender, and indeed without compromising the quality of the work. So we're very pleased to see you here, and I'm sure that you are very competent. And then we have Ms. Nontombi Matamela, acting GCOO. What is the G, general? What does it stand for?
Group
Chief Operating Officer. Oh, at the highest level in the clouds, right. Thank you. No, that's also good to see that we always said to women's organizations, stop catering to the lowest common factor. Because there are highly skilled women in our ranks. And I'm glad now that this is being recognized and that we have competent women on board in these critical positions. And that also the men here should have no fear, because I'm sure there are equally competent men floating around, okay? Very much floating. But then we've got the Export Credit Insurance Corporation of South Africa, SOC, State-Owned Company Limited, ECIC. I've already mentioned the chairman of the board, I'm not sure that we've ever met, and if we have, it may have been once. Is that? We've never met that I know of.
First frightening event for me to come to Parliament, so.
Well, on this, your maiden visit, you know, well, they still call in cricket a maiden, you know, it still retains that name for the cricket lovers, you are aware of that, huh? And the male, the men are very happy to call it a maiden when it's a maiden sometimes. And then we have the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. K. Kutwana, yourself. Your face looks a lot more familiar. Is that right? Been here before? And then the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. N. Mkwatazo. Now, how do you pronounce it?
Mkwatazo.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's important that we get to pronounce each other's names correctly. I'd hate to tell you what my name's been pronounced at. It would be a parliamentary apology required if I repeated it. Good. Anyway, we are on the point of adopting the amended agenda. We please have someone to propose. Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable... are you seconding that?
Yeah.
If first of all, second it then, yes, the Honourable MacPherson.
Yeah, no, I'll second it, and if I could just then have a matter under general at the end.
We don't have general on trade and industry minutes.
Well, if we can just make an opportunity for 2 or so minutes.
You need to mention what it is. Is it an announcement?
It's just seeking clarity with respect to my correspondence to you from last week.
Well, I've already referred to that, but you weren't here, no, and I can't go backwards. I don't think you expect me to. I will refer to it again, all right? I will refer to it again, and I'm sure it even comes up in minutes, all right? But can we then move on with the adoption of the agenda in... Honourable McLaughlin?
I'm seconding Comrade Williams.
Thank you. Without amendment, right. Can we then please ask the ECIC and tell us what is particularly important about this? Because I may have misled the committee. Who knows when, you know, one talks about and saying, well, you know, now that we're focusing a lot on, you know, productive manufacturing and production and exports and the whole African, you know, trade, etc. This is becoming more and more important. Now, in fact, what is perhaps some of the key characteristics and mandate of ECIC before you start? Why did we even bother to create it? Thank you.
Can you take this question?
Thank you, Chair. I guess it is since just after the Second World War that trade was perceived to be a big issue driving the wealth of nations, and therefore a lot of countries started trying to find out ways and means of getting their exports to the larger market, or their production to the larger market. And then the issue around export trade is that, I mean, or trade, international trade, is that it has a lot of risks around it, be it the risk of non-payment, or the risk of non-delivery of goods, or the risk of political upheavals in the country to which you are exporting, which could actually lead to all sorts of troubles. And then the concept of the Export Credit Agency was born, where the government of the exporting government or state would take the risk or de-risk the export by taking the risk of the buyer and putting that risk on their on the balance sheet of the state, in order to enable better terms for their for the production of the exporting country in the receiving country. So it's a means of a competitive bidding there. I mean, you know, if for example, I mean, I can take the risk out of this particular contract, then this contract will be won by my exporters. So that's how the whole issue of the export credit agencies came in. It comes in various forms. Initially, it was a pure insurance of a political risk cover because of the wars that were happening around in the world where, you know, the Second World War was a case in point, where all of a sudden, you know, the war erupts and you can't recover anything from your exports. And therefore, it was mostly political risk insurance that was being punted by the ECA model. But then, as it evolved, it now became also, necessary to do commercial risk insurance as well. The risk of, you know, the buyer being insolvent or turning insolvent in their country, and therefore being unable to pay you. So that risk also, you know, you carry for on behalf of your exporters. Usually, it covers the end-to-end. Basically, end-to-end means that, I mean, it can cover from agricultural production to, you know, commodities to merchandise and everything else, or capital goods. But the model that was chosen in South Africa was that of supporting the capital goods industry, capital goods and services. So you will see, if you look at the profile of the project that we have, which I will share with you as well in my presentation, they have been largely in the high capital intensive or high, high capital intensive, you know, segment. That was deliberate as well in terms of the design of the ECIC. But that model now, a number of ECAs have been interrogating these models, and this, we as well, we are interrogating this model, particular model, to say, but what what about the gaps that exist either in the small exporting sector? What about the gaps that exist in the merchandise export, where, you know, you some people may not actually find access or have access to credit that is offered by the banks without any underwriting that can happen in that? So that is a space that we are currently discussing with our principal in the Department of Trade and Industry, DTI. I don't know, Chair, whether that background, you know.
Yeah. Madam Chair, should I add to it?
Yes.
Because from
if we just use one mic.
Oh. Sorry. I just want to strive for a point. I mean, our CEO has quite articulately explained what we do as a business.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things, you know, as a board that we do and we pride ourselves on is we try to be strategic, and we try to play as an SOE in an area where there's market failure. We will not participate in the market in terms of assisting with export where private enterprises are competent enough and are happy to take on that risk. So we're very clear from a board perspective that our role is to actually enter the market where there's market failure. Market failure in the sense that private sector is not prepared to cover the political risk or the credit risk or the investment risk on a particular export. That is when we will step in as the ECIC and participate. So it's very important. We'll only participate where there's market failure.
Thank you. I think that just, you know, gives us a better understanding before we move further. Now, what we will have, and I'm not sure who's making the presentation, is yourself, Chief Executive Officer. Thank you.
Thank you. In this presentation, I will approach it in a manner that, if members, Chair, through you, would want me to explain further as I move along, I would be happy to do that if that is the case. So, yeah, I can be interjected at any time. This is actually the mandate, you know, the mandate of the ECIC, which is to insure against political and commercial risk relating to export of capital goods and services from South Africa.
Right.
And we have already explained that, but I mean the core issue really here is to drive the economic growth and or e- development or performance of our country. And basically we do this through such things as increasing the level of industrial output in South Africa, employment generation, as well as competitiveness in terms of, you know, earning foreign exchange from our exports of goods and services. We are governed by the legislation, the Export Credit and Foreign Investment Insurance Act of 1957. Chair, I think members should be conscious of the fact that it's 1957, yes, which is basically that we were as early as possible in the post-World War, well, we're in the Second World War, to actually adopt the ECA model. But as I say, it is under review.
It is of value to learn how old this is, and that may actually call on us to review it, but let us first hear the presentation.
Yes, Chair, and the Minister of I was saying that the Minister of Trade and Industry has actually alluded to the fact that, I mean, you know, because of the age of this Act, it is also possible that, I mean, you know, the mandate have been bastardized along the way, so we need to bring it all together. So that's why the review currently going on. This is our brand new vision, you know, because we wanted to be looking forward to this changing environment of the ECA world, to be the world-class export credit insurance, I mean credit agency in facilitating South African export trade and investment globally. That follows also from the DTI, you know, strategic intent of promoting export-led industrialization of South Africa, or export-driven industrialization. And our mission definitely to produce, to provide insurance, investment and export credit insurance solutions for South African exporters of capital goods and services. We take our cue from a number of national policy frameworks and initiatives and plans, the NDP, the IPEP, and the National Export Strategy at large. And as an ECA, we have to demonstrate that we can support South African produced products and services. Hence why we are very conscious of the need to have South African content in the projects that we support or in the exports that we support. And this is also, you know, but we have to align ourselves continuously with the global competition and competitive forces, as well as the supply chain, global supply chain or value chain integration. So that's why we keep on regularly reviewing our content, so that we don't lie outside where we become ourselves non-competitive in the global supply chain arrangement. And we are working closely with the trade Invest Africa, which is championed by the DDG here, Lerato, to adopt a unified approach by South Africa to winning export contracts. And Lerato, the DDG.
That's why I think it's important to use family names, you know, or surnames.
So the idea really is to aggressively win contracts, export contracts on the continent. And I think, I mean, we want to emphasize this, and we will be bringing it up as we move along. Why the continent is so important to us is because we have also seen a new scramble for Africa, where a lot of, you know, export credit agencies from Europe, from Asia, are quite busy on the continent, you know, getting into contracts for their own contractors or their own exporters in their own country. And we also have to be playing in that space, that we are saying that, I mean, you know, Africa is our backyard. Basically, the rest of the continent is our backyard. And therefore, using all the current trade arrangements that we have, and the bilaterals as well as multilateral involvement that South Africa has, we should actually leverage on those in order to promote South Africa's outward trade. While on the other hand as well, there are other, you know, facets of the DTI initiatives that are actually bringing in investment into South Africa as well. We are holding generally, you know, because we really want to have this as integrated as possible. So we have regular meetings with the DTI and National Treasury on key issues, challenges, and milestones, and that is going to be continuing. And now we need even to get closer alignment for cross-border financing strategies of all the DFIs, the IDC, PIC, and DBSA. Now getting to the home area, Chairman, where we list our strategic objectives for 2018-19. You will see that some of them have dropped a few from the previous year, and that has been explained previously that it was because of the auditor saying that, I mean, some of these were not quite measurable. Yeah. The measures were not. So we agreed on the reducing them to those 10, which have been our key strategic deliverables for the year.
Okay.
On the integrated report, just the highlights, the Chair, our financial assets in total as of March 2018 were 7 billion rand, and the value of insured programs was 27 billion. That is the total exposure of ECIC as currently happens. We measure our solvency in terms of whether we have sufficient capital without having to resort to the state or the government for assistance, whether we have sufficient capital to maintain that book that we have, using all the technical evaluations and the regulatory programs that we have, because we are regulated by the Prudential Authority of the Reserve Bank. And our solvency ratio is very good as it is now. You know, I know they are changing the methods of calculation, but it is very good because it says we can cover up to about 635% of our balance sheet. We can leverage that on the underwriting work. Our underwriting profit was standing at 389 million rand, and the targets that we achieved 100% of all our targets for the year. And our total equity, that is the money that is the own fund, is around 4 billion, which is what we have on our books. Chair, you know, in terms of the performance that we have stated there, as an insurer, we basically insure that exposure of 27 billion rand that I showed you, and we charge premiums. That's where the income and the capital is being built up from. And you will see that, I mean, we have really been performing very well. I will just want to explain the sharp fluctuation in our insurance premiums, because I'm sure that you will look a bit strange. Because of the nature of the project that we support, being a heavy capital equipment, a bit capital project, usually the gestation period is long. I think on average our project will run to about 7 years, and now we are beginning to see 10 years that are going to about 18 years. We are looking at one project in Mozambique on the gas side, which is actually running to about 18 years, you know, in terms of. So these are long gestation periods, you know. And therefore, you know, you'll find that, I mean, the spike will come where you write a deal. Like if you look at 2014-15, it was actually the project in Ghana, the power station in Ghana, the IPP power station in Ghana, SunPower. And then that all of a sudden brought a lot of premiums. You will also see if, you know, from when we write this project, that major project, the gas project that I'm talking about in Mozambique, you will see a lot of a big spike as well in terms of the premiums, and because we earn premiums, the written premiums we receive upfront, And then the earning profile is over time. But I mean, I can explain that when we need to, we get to it. On the financial performance, also in terms of asset growth, I've just highlighted there where you saw a dip from 2016 to 2017. That was that time when we were taking over the interest make-up liabilities onto the ECIC books because, I mean, like I've said, it was a project being long-term. Then you find that the profile in terms of the medium-term expenditure framework of the government is not aligned. So therefore, you know, because it's 3 years, the three-year rolling year. So then, you know, you find you have that discrepancy. But that is self-liquidating, and you know, by 2023, CFO, we should have been, we should be back to normal. I've mentioned some of the risks that we are having. I think major risk here actually is a currency problem because we underwrite projects in dollars and receive premium in dollars, but then we have to translate back into rands, and then if the exchange rate goes any which way, it leads to those differences. But I mean, those we can explain. But it's nothing that we is our doing. It's the doing of the economy and the global performance of the economy. But there are certain opportunities that we are pursuing, Chair. One of which is we have done a lot of research that actually have shown that there is a need for South Africa to have an export-import bank. That is the at the moment we are talking about insurance, but now we need to move to the where we can do the financing. You know, of exports, especially our SME sector and nascent export industries. The Black Industrial Program, we can also support that from that angle, as well as at the same time supporting the larger project. The other opportunity is the Afrexim Bank. I've stated also, you know, in this presentation that we have just launched last year a $1 billion fund or facility to support South African exports into the rest of the continent. And we are working already on a number of projects internally on that program, that taking that program. And the indication is that it may be, that amount may be used in about 5 years, which is also in support of the president, you know, $100 billion you know, investment in practice. Material issues, well, we spoke about, you know, the scarcity of skills, which we are working on in terms of training our staff for the future, as well as, you know, various other programs for bursaries and the likes. And also the limited investment options, I want to go about that because it's been discussed. I don't think the details, the technical details around the investment in terms of investment of our capital, because it is in dollars, you know, investing it outside South Africa and all that. So that the ministers are looking at.
Just one moment. Is everyone familiar with the Afrexim Bank? No. If you could just, you know, clarify what that is before you move on.
Okay. Afrexim Bank is an import export bank that is you know, owned by, I think about 52 African countries, part of the EU basket, but its focus is only on promoting intra-African trade mm-hmm. amongst African countries. And through ECIC, we took shareholding into Afrexim Bank last 2 years ago. 2017, we are shareholder from 2017. Because it's quite big, it's probably about 1.something%, but total value of our investment is $50 million. $50 million. Yes, but I mean, with that we are hoping something of the kind, yes. The quarterly performance milestones and achievements, I don't know whether I should go singularly about them or basically summarize. I can summarize you know, by saying that we are on target at the moment for meeting our annual from what you see on the quarterly. We were at 90% as of December. And you know, the only one that was remaining was training, but you know, we had to put some of the programs back to the fourth quarter, so that will be achieved. And we are online to achieve our 100% again in terms of achievement of our annual target. And that is also a validation of important, Chair, is that we should also be looking at what contribution has ECIC and, made in the both in South Africa in terms of economic growth and job creation, but not only there, but as well as in the host countries. What contribution have we had, or what impact have we had on the economic development of the countries in which we to which we export? Over the period 2018 and up to 2018, we supported projects to the value of 38.3 billion rand. 38.3 billion rand. That is in the 10-year period. And this map shows the countries effectively that we are active in. As I've said, you know, significant amount of capital investment has been destined to mining, which also is a demonstration of our competitive strength in mining projects, you know, knowledge of mining. But we have seen a surge in power projects that we are supporting on the continent, as well as in manufacturing. Some oil and gas, as I've said, on oil and gas, you know, it is still low, but it's going to spike quite heavily, you know, as we conclude some of these projects on the offshore in Mozambique. We estimate, in terms of our models, which have been, developed jointly with outside experts, some professors, we estimate that we have added up to 16.5 billion. To the South African GDP, that is net, through both at construction phase, at operational phase, and cumulative over time, you will see it is up to 16.4 billion since 2008. And with that, we have created about 60,000 jobs opportunities, which we have estimated. And that shows the levels at operational level and at construction phase. You'll see most of this happen at construction phase, but also we maintain that at operational phase. In terms of employment categories, you will see that most of the beneficiaries have been in the semi-skilled labor environment, as well as unskilled. Approximately 5 billion was added to the national fiscus by way of taxes because we are a tax-paying entity, which is something that we will be discussing with the Minister of Finance tomorrow, after tomorrow. 44 billion have been added, we estimate has been added to the national output of the host countries, those African countries that I have shown you about. And 100,000 job opportunities in those countries as well. Most of the job opportunities in those countries actually happen at operational phase, You'll see that in South Africa it's during construction phase. That is when the plant is being constructed in South Africa. But in those countries, it's during operational phase because, I mean, the projects are actually in their countries, in their country. And Chair, I think that's how far we go. I don't know whether my colleagues will need something to add. I wanted to add something about our new CFO, Chair. She is only a month in the job. But she has been in at ECIC for the past 8 years. So she's homegrown. So at long last we have a CFO that is homegrown.
No, that's very useful.
And tells us we're making progress. Thank you very much for that, Mr. Kutwane. How do you pronounce your name? Kutwane, just like that, yes. CEO, thank you for that overview. It enables the committee members to go straight to the issues that they wish to focus on, seek any clarity, ask questions. So let's just try and go possibly for two rounds, not talking for more than 3 minutes or so, unless, you know, you move into 3.5. Shall we start? Honourable Williams has his hand up first. Honourable Mantosh. Let me write this. Honourable Mantosh. Are there any other hands at this point? No. Right. Over to you. Honourable William.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. My question is around the review by the DTI on the Enabling Act. I just want to know, do you know what they're reviewing? For instance, will their review lead to an amendment to the Act which could change your mandate completely, and then, you know, or is it in line? Maybe the DTI should come in here, because I'm a bit... I'm not confused, but if the Enabling Act is under review and it is a radical change that's going to be taking place, then everything that they're talking about could suddenly get put onto a different direction. And so I just want to know from the DTI, what exactly are they reviewing, and or are they just updating it? You know, is it still going to be focusing on African trade after the review, that sort of thing? I'd like to know, is that review going to change that in any way or shape? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Mantosh.
Thank you, Chair. I also rise to appreciate the presentation, but only have two clarification questions today. I missed the CEO when he talked about the dip in their assets. I could not get what he said. And my other comment, or is also a clarity-seeking question, what do they mean when they talk about your contribution, whether it's in jobs or whether it's in the GDP of the country you're talking about, estimated? Why don't you have concrete statement that says we contributed this much? Why is it an estimate?
Thank you, Honourable Mantosh. Honourable Buyani.
Chair, let me first welcome the presentation. It was an eye-open presentation. Chair, I just wanted to check, man, how they determine their premiums in the event of political risk. And how do they help companies recover their commitment, whether import or export? Or those were the two. And also, like, man, to have a thorough understanding in terms of whether they can be able to give us a document, broader perspective in terms of the ICIC, because we want to engage on those documents and be able to understand exactly what is their mandate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Buyani. Honourable McLaubel.
No, thanks, Comrade Chair. And that's when come the presentation. And one of the things that if we are like exposed to the financial authorities, that we'll have to be able to look at how are you handling some of the issues. We must commend you with respect to the audit outcomes,
yes.
Because they look favorable, and we hope that our new CFO, working with yourselves, you should be able then to put an audit remedial action plan, because when you handle these kind of matters, you will want that there should be no matters of emphasis, because the integrity, remember, the your fund should be also, you are one of those that get to be rated, because there are number of stringent conditions you have to meet. Therefore, the question of clean governance, Chair, is very important.
Sure.
But overall, you could see, but probably the CEO might want to explain how did this matter of emphasis arose, and what do you seek to do? Well, the others, I think the remark in passing around the taxation regime and possible issues around exemptions, well, probably in the next term, these are the matters we'll want you to hear. What is the thinking of yourselves as an agency or a commission, but more importantly also to say what is the department thinking, because if there are those kind of consideration that has to be granted to you, and also in the very same space, because you're in the same space of risk, like SARS, in the more or less, the risk adversity is more important that you should be able to deal with. But overall, I think we are managing a very tight ship, and probably you will have to find a mechanism that this institution, when we try to transform our country and include more black people, to say how do you get to be known if some of the, because there are these lot of trade relations we're actually enjoying now,
yeah,
both in our region, which is Africa, and the rest of the world. And many of our people are getting into this space. I know some of small enterprises that are actually doing a lot of exportation of goods and services. How do they know that you exist? How do you ensure that there is some kind of a civic education and awareness, so that they too, from a financial exposure point of view, when there is this infrastructure and an instrument, it becomes an instrument that does not inhibit those that don't have the knowledge of the existence of the institution. And that's why Comrade Chair, we are correct to say, explain some of the things. Because you might find that even the legislators, they are not familiar with the work you do, especially in the light that some of these legislations are very old. They are very old. But we must thank you how you explain it, the essence, the objects, why this kind of institution, all states, they do provide, because the world we do do business is as much as integrated. But the security concerns and the other risk in terms of sophistication, in terms of crime, is very high. But I want to say thanks, Comrade Chair.
No, thanks, Honourable Buyani. I wasn't sure if I saw the Honourable Tierko's hand or not. Yes?
Thanks, Chair. Mina, I think it's two, if it's not one. The page, the other page will be page 12, slide 12. When they speak about new skills and systems, I want to check how are they making sure that our people in the country participate in the skills that they are needing, instead of importing girls from other countries. So our system of education, how are they advising our local universities to make sure that the skills that they will need, because they're saying that the investment, some of them, it's 18 years, it's a long term. some of them. So those skills, are they tapping into our system of education and making sure that people are trained currently for future ongoing processes, because it also indicates the issue of unemployment, which is higher, unskilled, which is a problem also, and the issue of forced industrialization, which the president is very key on that one. How best do you make sure that the exim, the countries globally and in South Africa, we participate also, our people go and participate outside and come into the South Africa. Those exchanges, I want to know how our youth going to benefit out of all this process that is happening in this institution, this entity. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Tiaku. I have just a few comments myself here. On the earlier, I think it is page 10 here, there was a reference, possibly I think by yourself, Honourable Williams, about the law, and over there the reference is the risk arises due to an obligation on page 10 being denominated in US dollars while the DTI grant is in RAND. You know, the non-alignment between the two and the volatility, of course, of currency right throughout since 1994. So how, you know, we would welcome you taking that up when you do address the issues of review around legislation. The other issue is related to skills and training, which has already been referred to by the Honourable Tiaku. A reference was made to training not yet being on track in the second quarter, but that measures were already implemented to ensure this was on track. And we certainly welcome that action of yours to ensure that that would be on track. The other issues relate to jobs that were referred to. I think it starts from about page 23 or so. You refer to, I mean, I was very pleased you'd also raised the issue of value addition on page 22, the value addition to the SAE economy and broken it down. But on 23, you refer to 60,000 job opportunities are estimated to have been created, sustained in South Africa. Then you refer to the host country, 100,000. But then when the breakdown occurs, you refer to unskilled, your breakdown, the legend is unskilled, semi-skilled, and skilled labor. And I think a comment is also made to the effect that this is largely in the unskilled labor. I may have misheard, but I thought I heard you indicate that. Now, while we welcome jobs across the board, without a doubt, let us say that at the outset, nevertheless, you know, the idea would be to look at least towards semi-skilled and skilled. And is there any way that your interventions could improve that particular ratio? Because I see that towards the end here, there seem to have been at least a flattening out and things not being so lopsided in that particular regard. So I think, yes, on page 28, where you still refer to unskilled, but it's certainly a lot less sharper than it is in earlier occasions. But we must welcome your presentation here in this term. It's come at a very important time when we are recently, you know, the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement in our region, as it were, moving further afield and other things coming up. Truly, this is an important state-owned company, SOC, and we do need to keep a weather eye on it. Thank you very much. If you would respond to those requests for queries and the comments are purely comments. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I've very quickly dotted on about, there's about 12 queries or questions. And what I'll do is I will try to facilitate it between our CEO and our DTI Narato as well and our CFO.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's a bit difficult for people to record this. Just keep your mic a little bit closer.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So there's roughly 12 points, and what I'll do is I'll just manage the process in terms of getting the people within ECIC to respond to each one of them. For me, the first one dealt with the question of what is the mandate of the ECIC. I think what I'd like to do is just give a quick background in terms of what is the market around ECAs globally. And we talk about the vision, we want to be world-class. We chose the word world-class because, as I said, we're not looking to compete with local agencies. We're actually competing with international ECAs. And we're actually competing with the likes of India, China, the US, in terms of them bringing a package of exports around the world. And in order to compete in that background, we need to make sure we've got an entire toolkit from an export point of view that assists our South African companies to export. So ECIC is one of many little bits that we need to put together as a country. So we need to work with the likes of the IDC in terms of putting a package together. We need to work with the South African banks in supporting export trade. So if you looked at our mandate, and it was written in 1957, it was written at a time when, you know, we were looking to export certain goods versus the definition of goods in the world has changed. If you look at an iPhone, the question is, where is it manufactured?
Yeah.
It's the sum of all the components that make up the product that gets exported. And a really good example that we debated as a board was Bell Equipment. Bell Equipment is a South African company in the sense that it brings in product into the country in a semi-knockdown fashion, it's put together, and that Bell Equipment is then exported. So from a content point of view, we need to relook at the content to say, what is the right percentage of that content that should be South African? If we apply our current mandate that says at least 50% of the content is South African, the reality is that South Africa, we don't produce 50% of the content that goes into a Bell Equipment. But at the same time, we need to support, it's a South African company that employs over 600 people. The question is, how do we help a company like Bell Equipment? So in terms of looking at our mandate, the idea was to be smarter to compete globally with our competing ECAs. So we approached the DTI and said, can we relook at the definition so that we as ECIC can be more effective? The idea is not to change what we're doing, but to be more effective in what we're doing. So it's a widening of the definition of capital goods. And so if you very quickly summarize, what do? We support capital goods and we support investments from a political risk cover. So the political risk cover is not going to change. It's the definition of what we are supporting to export that we want to widen. And if you then throw in something as the fourth industrial revolution, if you look at the product sets that gets exported under that type of a mandate, our current mandate won't be able to support it. And so the creation of an Exim Bank, which will provide more for trade finance, would play a critical role in the sum of the products that we support as ECIC. So I'll then turn around to Lerato from the DTI.
Thank you, Chair. Just to come in as well, based on the question by Honourable Williams, whether we're making a wholesale review and what that would mean. Fundamentally, what we are doing right now, we seized with the question of what do we actually need to effectively support South African exports to the rest of Africa specifically and to the rest of the world. So that's the question that we are seized with. This is buttressed and underpinned by the President's priority of export-led growth and export-led industrialization. So conducting that assessment of saying what measures do we have, we then have to come up with a roadmap, and if that roadmap leads us to an amendment of the founding legislation, that is what's going to happen, and we'll come back to committee to do so. However, we don't want to preempt, but we're leaving ourselves room to say, should we need to have a legislative amendment, Chair, we shall come back to committee and obtain the necessary approvals. So where we are now with the assessment, what the assessment has uncovered is that we do need to have an Exim Bank, a South African Exim Bank, which is going to then support the insurance business with the lending business. Again, that in itself is a deeper assessment of what that means for the company. Are we going to have the ECA in its current form, or do we have an additional entity that takes care of that? So it's quite an involved study. We don't want to make mistakes. So at this point, we are doing the necessary assessments, and all of those will be brought back to committee for support, for advice. So we'll make sure that we do that. So the question that we need to be able to answer is, are we effectively supporting our exports? And I think that's what you hold us to account on, and we'd like to make sure that we have an efficient system in government with our SOCs and ourselves from a policy standpoint to support South African exports.
The next question is around the dip in the assets and then the use of estimates.
Executive Officer.
Thanks, Chair. Let me first of all explain the interest makeup environment that we're working on, what we call IMU.
What is IMU?
Yes, that was probably what you wanted to explain now, Madam Chair. We call it interest makeup scheme or mechanism. What happens is that when the bank lends, they lend at a certain cost of capital. Basically, they lend at a particular interest rate when they lend for export. Now, because they are lending now in dollars, the interest rate, that's where the mismatch again comes in. The cost at which the South African banks would go and raise capital in the international market, it will be probably at LIBOR, which is London, whatever, you know, plus a margin. Now, you find that, South African banks cannot meet that margin and compete effectively with the likes of banks from Germany, banks from France, banks from US. So what the government would do then would say, we will subsidize to close that gap, yes. So effectively, that would be where this IMU grant will be coming in and, voted and then comes and be paid over. And then we will be saying to the bank, if you support the particular exporter and you finance them at that much, then we will make the difference. So that scheme was administered by ECIC since time immemorial, ever since it was formed in 2001 on behalf of the DTI. And what the auditors then started raising the issues that, the manner in which it was being accounted for was wrong, that it should be actually the money that should be sitting on the balance sheet of the ECIC. Initially, we had thought that it is it's sitting on the balance sheet of the DTI. So there was that debate, and then we ultimately got the legal advice or the legal opinion that, ECIC must absorb that liability. By that time, because definitely it is what has assisted our book to grow, by that time it was about 2 billion rand. The value of the commitments up, because, it was financing, we're bridging the margin for long-term projects, while the MTF is only for the period of 3 years. So that's why it built up. And then in 2014, we decided that let's suspend the use of this mechanism until we can wipe out that 2 billion of liabilities. And then we estimated that by about 2021, it would have been fully liquidated, so to say. And that's what we are online to do. But now the problem is also that the issue of the grant now coming in rand from the DTI, obviously. While in actual fact, the obligations for the projects that we do is in dollars. So when there is the dollar works, when the dollar strengthens against the rand, effectively, basically, you have a gap opening up when you have to translate. But then, again, because of the tax issues, when you translate it back into rand, then the result is a lot of rand, a lot of profit, and they tax you on it, forgetting that in actual fact there is IMU to deal with that side. So those are the kind of things that we are trying to work on. I don't know, Chair, whether that explains things.
Thank you.
Yeah,
just that, you know, you may feel comfortable mentioning words like the LIBOR rate in finance, but I don't think all our members in trade and industry know that it's basically, isn't it, the London, it's based on that London offered rate, which sometimes we often look at as a basic rate of interest, but the L stands for the London side of things. And it's just a mechanism, right? So as you use what I call these special words, just explain them, please.
Madam Chair, just to add to what our CEO said, but I want to say it bluntly because that's the way I am, the dip in the assets was because this company, which is a state-owned company, picked up a charge of 2 billion rand for government. It's as simple as that. So we took on the IMU liability directly onto the ECIC balance sheet. And is it the right thing to do going forward? Possibly yes. And I don't believe companies should be allowed to act in an agency capacity to deliver on certain mandates. So if there's a mandate, it must be clear. And if it's ECIC or any entity, it must go onto that balance sheet. So yes, one, it happened, but it was a major charge to this balance sheet. KK, on the estimates?
The estimate, Madam Chair, you know, we have developed an internal model. This is economic. It uses what they call multipliers input-output analysis that they use.
Yeah.
Effectively, because I mean, it is difficult to go and start counting and looking at what was the contribution to the GDP. But you know, using these multipliers, we know that in a particular sector, say maybe if we are talking in the coal production sector, if it is a power station, how much employment will be generated or man hours will be needed to produce so much of the output of the of the goods. So you know, we take in those multipliers that we know, then we apply them to the value to the sectors that we have supported, and then you know it comes up with all those numbers that you know as a solution to the equations, the internal equations in there. So that's why it actually, you know, I mean, one of the things that we test with is, yes, in actual fact, because we have been supporting a lot of mining. Takes a lot of unskilled labor. So that's why you see that, Madam Chair, the unskilled labor being higher earlier on. But now because our portfolio later on has shifted into more high technology, you know, power production, for instance, telecoms and the others, agro-processing and manufacturing, then you start seeing the semi-skilled labor and skilled labor coming, creeping into the equation. So That is the best way I can explain it. I don't know whether that is sufficient.
Okay, the next one was, we wanted to get our CFO to do this one, but she says, now give me a chance next time around. But how to determine the premium?
Again, I need to mention that we have a global body of export credit agencies.
Yeah.
It is called the BEN Union, or the International Association of Export Credit Agencies.
Mm-hmm.
That's where all the countries that have got ECICs mm-hmm. meet. And initially there was something that they used to say was called the arrangement. The arrangement basically is something that the ECA is, because they were formed in Europe mainly initially,
yeah,
the Organization of Economic Development, OECD, they had this sort of an arrangement where they decided that this is the manner in which we are going to calculate the risks given different categories of countries, and then we rate those countries according to the risk ratings we give them, and then that determine the kind of, you know, the premiums that we will charge per country on the political risk and on the commercial risk. So we sort of, you know, inherited that when we formed our own ECA as well, and wanted to understand more how those intricacies work. But with time, then we developed our own, and you know, now we use our own rating system, ECIC rating system, which sometimes produces different results. You know, for example, you know, we would invest in a country like Zimbabwe when Exim Bank would not. I mean, US Exim Bank wouldn't.
So ours is much more, because we understand the risks of these trading countries much better. So that's how we determine those premiums. Now, in terms of the capital, that the question really was that how do you ensure then that in case of a project failure you can recoup? You can recoup the premiums, because I mean you earn the premiums over the life of the project. Now, we have had because of the nature of the project that we support being high capital intensive project, there are always mechanisms to restructure this project. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, for instance, Mirupishe should not fail, you know, so we have to restructure that. If it was a standalone power station, the amount of money that have gone into that, we would have to somehow find a way of restructuring that. So we have had a lot of restructuring of this project. By nature, you know, it's an experience that every ECA has got. You know, we always have to. We are now working on the restructuring in Ghana as well. So, but if you look at our claims history for over the 17 years that we have been in existence, we have not managed this ship so tightly that we do not foresee a major risk of a meltdown on the project that we have funded.
What was the project involved in?
The
17-year-old one.
No, I'm saying we are 17 years old as an ECIC from 2001, when we inherited from the DTI, we inherited from the old Act. We basically inherited the DTI's. The DTI was actually underwriting directly on its on the government balance sheet, and then as an ECA. But then when we were formed, we took over the book that was now, you know, managed through a credit guarantee. That basically says that, I mean, in that period that we have been in existence, we have not experienced a major claim. But that does not mean that the claim, as an insurer, we have to be expecting the claim. So that's why we are managing the capital in such a way that if that claim comes, it should not harm the South African fiscus. It should not harm our finances in South Africa.
Just to add.
So then we'll come back.
Just to add to the CEO, in terms of writing premium in insurance businesses and your ability to recover, which is what we call the recovery of salvage in a worst-case situation, the power of the ECIC is its link with government and our ability to use government relationships cross-border to be able to renegotiate and do a recovery on any major premium that we've written that's gone bad. So the strength of the organization is highly dependent on government. Government relationships makes a huge difference. And in terms of pricing, our pricing models take that into account in terms of how good is our relationship with a neighboring country. So Zimbabwe is an example. We will write because we believe we've got the relationships in a case if something goes AY on a project. Next question was around a broader detailed document explaining exactly what ECIC does. KK, can we present that? And so we could definitely do quite a detail. I think our integrated report is quite detailed, but we're quite happy to either take members through that offline, or we can actually produce a simpler version, a handbook that we can circulate to members.
I think, looking at members, the handbook would be very helpful and constructive. Certainly, it's the first time you've been here this term, and for many members here, this is the first time they've been in this committee as well. Thank you.
Okay. The next question which was asked was around the emphasis on the audit, and I think we're definitely going to get our CFO to talk on that one.
Thank you, Chair. The main issue was it related to the accounting policy relating to insurance debts. So what happened is AG, previously we used to be audited by the other auditing firms like your PwC and AG, and they felt that, I mean, and Deloitte and KPMG, and they felt that our accounting policy were sufficient. But when AG came in last year, they felt that the current policy does not really speak to the insurance debtors. Mm-hmm. So as a result, they requested that we need to have a separate policy specific for insurance receivable and the other one for other receivables. So hence there was that emphasis of matter, because in terms of the current accounting, the old accounting policy, it only referred to we account for debtors by using the effective interest rate method, whereas for insurance debt we do not discount. So that is where the misalignment was. And we had to update our financial statement so that we disclose the two accounting policies separately. Thank you.
Madam Chair, you know, I'm independent and I'm not part of the management team, so I'm very clear. The AG was wrong. The AG's understanding of the accounting standards was certainly incorrect. This was the fight that I did have with the AG, and I assisted management in it. But it was the AG after all, so we couldn't change their mindset. And it's a technical nature of insurance accounting, and this is long-term insurance accounting. And we believe if it was one of the other international firms, we wouldn't have had an emphasis of matter. It was just a lack of understanding on the part of the AG. Our CFO has been very kind to them.
Well, you know, I think what for us would be valuable is if we referred this issue to the AG and asked for an explanation. I think that would assist all of us looking at members in this regard. But just on that issue, because other members want to ask other questions, this is on this specific issue, Honourable Buyani. Yes?
Chair, thanks, because mine was not quite responded to in terms of the how do they determine their premiums. Seemingly to me, they look at faces of countries. This is Zim, this is the premium. This is London, this is the premium. This is because we want a standardized premium that will be able to at least be workable. And also, they must have a policy that will be able to guide them as to whether they are governed by the Constitution of South Africa with its policies, or they are governed by OAU kind of an arrangement. So that is what I wanted definitely to check. And also the misrealignment of the rand vis-a-vis the dollar brand and so forth and so forth. So that is what I wanted also to be part of that document. Even if they don't clarify now, but they can be able to package those responses clearly to the committee so that we are able to engage them. Thanks, Chair.
Right, just in that regard, I think it would be useful, apart from the handbook, in a separate exercise, your risk profiling. You've already indicated you've shifted from the European one, as it were, and developed your own approach. What factors are taken into account? And is there some form of scoring for these factors, or how does it work that enables you to reach an informed decision? And what is the policy around that? So you don't have to respond now, but come back to us, and then we can at least look at the written response and then request if we need more. That was in relation to a question already asked. But there are some members who wish to raise other questions. Honourable Williams, is there anyone else? No.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a question. How does the institution that you are relate to transformation? Because a lot of the companies that this government now wants to give support to will be black-owned and black-controlled, as opposed to the existing companies that organizations like yourself have been assisting since 1957 that are white-owned and white-controlled. So what emphasis or any assistance do you give to emerging companies in South Africa that want to, for the first time, start exporting to other African countries, if there is anything? That's the first point. My second point is, I take a little bit of an exception to the fact that the speaker said that the Auditor General was wrong. I don't think that they have the authority to tell Parliament that the Auditor General is wrong. As far as we're concerned, the Auditor General is always right. And so I think that's not the thing to say in Parliament, even if you might be outspoken, etc., but not here. We don't believe the Auditor General is wrong, and we will ask the Auditor General to give us clarity on that. And then if you're wrong, you'll be coming back here to explain. Thank you, Chair.
Well, I think to some extent that's a protocol-related issue, but we will be, I'm already indicating, requesting a clarification on this particular matter itself, because we are aware that different financial approaches operate with respect to both the public sector and the private sector, and neither is right or wrong. It's just that they have a different approach to the matter. But before we can comment further on the matter, we would need the Auditor General's clarification. Suffice us to end there. Unless you have anything more to add, we've already addressed the Honourable Buyani thing. We want to actually you to come back in writing on that matter. Yes, CEO?
I think the transformation issue, we are very, very, very conscious of our role in the transformation space. As I was talking about the nature of the project that we support, in one project, you know, you will find that there is one aggregator, something like what you call an EPC contractor or engineering procurement and, you know, management contractor. What they do is that they will be aggregating all the members in the all the people in the value chain for that particular production. And what we want to concentrate on really is for our transformation efforts and our Black Industrialist Program is actually to tie them to those value chains down there and actually make sure that the majority of the black people actually access the trade finance or the financing mechanisms for support of that. One of the SATIC program, one of the African Bank program of $1 billion, one of the things that is actually looking at is actually to ensure that those value chains are supported and strengthened.
Do you make a final comment, Chairman?
Yes, Madam Chair, I've heard the Honourable Mr. Williams, I respect it, but what I do want to add on is to very quickly talk about positioning ECIC from a competitive space point of view. And one of the members asked a question around taxation. ECIC is a tax-paying entity, that's one, and if you compare that to other ECAs around the world, most of them do not fall within the same space of being a regulated entity. When I say regulated, meaning from a prudential authority point of view, we need to accord with the Financial Services Board, the old Financial Services Board. And that comes with a requirement that in terms of international rating agencies and to get a rating for ECIC, we are very mindful of that. So we always run this business on the basis of ensuring that we can actually compete and accord with the international rating agencies. Because the major banks who invariably place or take risk with the ECIC political risk cover will rely on our independent rating. So that's very important. And to come back to the tax issue, in order to be competitive and coming back to the pricing, we as an entity need to compete with an international entities and ECAs where they don't pay tax. So from a pricing point of view, we would need to take even the tax into consideration. So from a summary point of view, ECIC is on the back foot in terms of competition, and looking at or re-looking at the tax status of ECIC would be something that this committee should look at going forward.
Right. It does seem as if both from the committee point of view, members have raised the comments they wish to make, made them, and raised the questions. From your side, you've responded to what we have requested, but we have also requested certain things to be responded to in writing. What we usually do now is to give you a date for the return of that, and looking at our schedules and so on, we certainly would want that here in this office, that is with Mr. Medima. Today is Tuesday. It would be a good idea if he gets it Thursday afternoon, Friday, so that we can be made aware of it as chair on the Monday, as it were, and the documents can be circulated before the next meeting on Tuesday, because the meeting which follows today is the 26th of February. If that's clear. So I'm sure you have Mr. Medima's contact details, do you? Right. With respect to the handbook per se, and related to that was a question and a comment which called on you to please try to make your services aware, make them, publish them, or empower the small businesses, small and medium, to become more aware of the service you offer, because the focus today is shifting more and more to the small and medium enterprises, and how many of the entrepreneurs are aware of this. So we are hoping that that's taken into account as you develop the handbook, that we're not looking at that arriving on Thursday, Friday, but rather looking at a date in March, I would say. You know, if we look at about the 10th or whatever on March, that would be quite soon enough, the 12th of March, so that we would be able to acknowledge it on the 13th of March itself. And if there was any reason for you to clarify anything, we could look at that time. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for coming. And we appreciate you all being here. And we certainly wish the new CFO well, Chief Financial Officer. Thank you very much. Now, the committee, of course, the decision we took last week already was the, and which we adopted when we adopted the agenda, was the second quarterly report. You will recall that on Tuesday we'd asked for comments from parties, and I'm not aware that all of the parties made any comment, but the deadline has passed, and we now go back to the second quarterly report to adopt it. You now have your intro. Has everyone got the documents? Has everyone? Right, okay. Have you got it? Sorry, Honourable Albert's right, okay. Then I'm going to go through this reasonably fast, the reason being that some of the what we have not been through are the conclusions and the recommendations. That's what we have not. You may leave if you so wish. Thank you. All right. Looking at the introduction, let's not have comments on any spelling. The staff will clean that up. The first paragraph of the introduction, which you're seeing for the first time. The DTI is critical in creating an enabling, inclusive, and competitive environment that attracts investment and promotes trade, thereby contributing positively to economic growth and employment. And then it moves on. The first paragraph ends. These are the incentives that the DTI is using to leverage investment into the country. The second paragraph of that intro is the sharp thrust of incentives continues to impact positively on stimulating private sector investment, especially in manufacturing and agro-processing. refers to the inclusive economy, the black industrialists, the supply side challenges, and finally ends, the special economic zones rollout continue to provide much needed impetus to driving a productive, not productively, but a productive and inclusive economy. We did go and deal with the mandate. Do you remember those of you who were present on Tuesday and also the following, when was it, Wednesday? The purpose, page 2. If you raise your hand, I'll know you have a difference or want to comment. Page 3. Page 4, you'll see the points that you did make have already been implemented. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. I'm sure members are aware that the tea is there and they've seen it when they came in. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9. Page 10 is blank. Is that correct? Is everyone in the same position as I am? All right. So it's just a photostatting error. All right. It's not a substantive mistake. Page 11. Page 12. The comments on the what was it, the, not the special economic zones, but the industrial parks, and where the budget was located, was also made clearer. And exactly what page is that on, Ms. Sheldon, where that point that referred to the location of that, what page was that, where the simplification was sought? Oh, it's on page 14. Don't worry, it's on that last thing, right? Page 13. Page 14. And I've just asked us to read that because people, we saw clarity there. Committee raised a concern about the extension to the second phase of the revitalization of the industrial parks, but sought clarity. You see, that's still left like that.
Just added, but also sought clarity.
Yes, but also, and also sought clarity about the under-expenditure of the budget under the special economic zones and the economic transformation program. Not but and. The DTI explained that the special economic zones and ETP was responsible for the policy on industrial parks. And that was something we referred to before. They're all going to be in CAPS, industrial parks. It's a specific program. While the budget for the revitalization was held within the Incentive Development Admin Program. The DT is looking at how capital IP industrial parks can complement special economic zones, again the CAPS, and is engaging the relevant provincial and local governments on the industrial parks program. Further under-expenditure under the SEZs and Economic Transformation Program was due to delays in the listing of the BBBE Commission. This funding was earmarked for infrastructure such as office premises and IT equipment. Now, that was the one that was still outstanding, but it has been largely corrected. And then we asked members to send through their conclusions. You've all got the conclusions. Right. 4.1. The committee commends the department for having achieved most of its second quarter targets as outlined in the APP. The committee welcomed the fact that the DTI has overachieved its year-to-date targets with respect to its non-financial performance in a number of areas, such as jobs retained, export sales generated, and investment projects facilitated within the pipeline, notwithstanding fiscal constraints. While it has not met three of its quarterly targets, one of these projected number of new jobs. One of these, the projected number of new jobs supported from projects or enterprises approved, has been exceeded over the six-month period. 4.2. The committee also commends the DTI for being one of the few departments whose staff profile represents the demographics of our country in terms of race, gender, and people with disabilities. Is that still the term used, people with disabilities? Right, no, well, I asked staff to check and they confirm, I can see the nodding, they've checked, so maybe the government is still using that. 4.3. The committee recognised that although there has been a significant under-expenditure of 20.7% against planned expenditure, this is not unusual for the second quarter, given the payment of claims against granted incentives. 4.4, it's just a numbering problem. The committee reiterates its support for the BBBE legislation as an instrument to advance the transformation and ownership of our economy. In this regard, the BBBE Commission is considered to be a critical institution to ensure that economic transformation is effective and sustainable in South Africa. The committee is, however, concerned about the continued delays in listing the BBBE Commission, as this may have an impact on its ability to establish its systems and improve its capacity. 4.5. While the committee acknowledges the work done to address the reconfiguration of the NEF, it remains concerned about the delay in finalizing the arrangement with the Industrial Development Corporation. The NEF has played a critical role in supporting black entrepreneurs in all economic sectors, and this role has been inhibited due to capital constraints. this delay, capital constraints, you know, that is the recapitalization issue. This delay negatively impacts on economic transformation as well as on economic growth and job creation. Therefore, the recapitalization process should be expedited. 4.6. I'm not sure where it was. Both of you. Honorable Chirka?
I just don't get it where I saw it. The issue of the NEF, the configuration, is it with Minimisa? Or it was about the building or what? Can I be extended?
The committee acknowledges the work.
Sorry. The work done to address the reconfiguration of NEF. It remains concerned about the delay in finalizing the arrangement. The arrangement, I take it to have been the recapitalization and the incorporation. I will take your hand in a minute, Honourable MacPherson. Remember, they were then told, look, in order to enable and facilitate this recapitalization, you need to be part of the IDC stable. And that's how I understood. But if you believe that it needs to be just clarified so that it's clearly understood. All right. Honourable MacPherson, is this the same issue or
yes,
another
it is.
Issue?
The same issue. You know, it the arrangement
yeah.
was
right. yeah.
Not necessarily the recapitalization, because we've been talking about that for 5 years. The arrangement refers to the collapsing, if you like, of the NEF into the IDC, or falling under the roof of the IDC, to use the IDC's balance sheet to leverage off.
Yeah.
That's what the arrangement is. And still to date, we have no idea when that's going to happen. We have no idea how far it is down the road. So I mean, I just think that's you know what needs to be clear about what the arrangement is.
Yes. Let me just point this out. You see, Ms. Sheldon, I think members are correct here in that there are two issues. The one is a long-standing issue. And in fact, one of the reasons it was said, all right, let's send it to the IDC, that sort of was pushing it towards that. Let's try, I mean, if anyone can enable it to be recapitalized, it would be that. But the NEF would then be, as I understand it, and perhaps we can get some understanding from yourself, Ms. Sheldon, it would become fall within the IDC itself as one of the many entities, as it were, rather than DTI per se. Now, it doesn't seem... you know, from what the committee's heard, that hasn't really happened. But that's what we were told would happen. Can we put it that way? And as I sit here, that has not happened. Is that not the case? It hasn't happened,
no,
that
part.
No, it
hasn't happened, Chief. On the top of page 14, the DTI's response has been... Okay, so they had made a proposal to Cabinet, and Cabinet had requested that further work be done on this merger proposal and for the reintegration to be more ambitious. So at this stage, as far as the understanding is, the DTI had an intention, the Minister had processed this, and then the delay is at Cabinet itself.
Well, I think let's just say that. You see, that's the reality. So either it's left out or we clarify it. And I'm looking at all the members. I understand we wouldn't want to leave it out, but that we would want it within. All right? Yes?
Can we ask the DTI to clarify?
Yes. Now, DTI is here as the group chief, is that right? Operating officer, which is a very senior ranking, almost like the DG, yes?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honourable members. The feedback that the DG gave at the time was exactly what Ms. Sheldon is saying, that the proposal was submitted to Cabinet, and Cabinet requested that further work be done. So that further work is still being done, Chairperson.
Well, then I think our conclusion must be quite clear on that point. So while the committee acknowledges that work has begun, it hasn't been done. It's begun on the reconfiguration of NEF on the merger proposal with IDC. It looks forward to this being expedited. I think that's one aspect of it. All right? The next aspect is the money, the recap. And then when we talk about the recapital arrangements, that it remains concerned about the delay in finalizing the recapitalization, but is of the opinion that once the reconfiguration takes place, this will also. Don't use the word kick in, but that's what we mean. All right. Do we agree on that, everyone? Okay. Yeah, because that's, 4.6. The committee welcomes the DTI's efforts. I can't read red, you see. What is it? To facilitate community participation and awareness, raising through road shows regarding legislation such as the amendment to the Liquor Act. The amendments, yours is darker, the amendments to the Liquor Act seeks to deal with the fragmentation of, yeah, that is sufficient. All right, those are your conclusions, and we then come on to the recommendations. Sure. Who? Honourable Tiako?
The committee welcomes the DTI's effort to facilitate community participation in awareness campaigns. Is it awareness campaigns or is it just awareness and that's it? Awareness raising.
Mm. I want to check on what I said. Read just a minute. Read it for now.
They say it's awareness raising, but on the body, the other side, it was talking about campaigns. Awareness campaigns.
Let's just do campaigns. Raising awareness through campaigns.
Roadshows.
Something, members. I think, first of all, I'm creating part of the confusion because I'm not able to read it clearly. And in not being able to read it clearly, it's creating some of the confusion. Let me allow someone to read that through who can read it.
I volunteer myself, Chair. The committee welcomes the DTI's efforts to facilitate community participation and awareness raising through roadshows regarding legislation. So let's leave it like that, Chair.
Can we move to the recommendations? Informed by its deliberations, the committee recommends that the House request that the Minister of Trade and Industry consider. Yeah, you've already got all the shoulds and consider. One, tabling a report clarifying the reasons for the delay in listing the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Commission. Is that what you're going along with? Right. Now, members, apart from that, we always have a little appreciation, and you can come back to that report that never had this in. I'm not going to read it. It's our standard appreciation to staff for what they have done and the references. All right? So we pick this up with the conclusions, the intro and the conclusions. and I need to put it to you, I need someone to propose the adoption of this committee quarterly report to. Yes, hand, and please speak to that.
No, thanks, Chair. We would want to propose that this report gets adopted and also join you in the appreciation of the good work that is done by both the team that helps us, including the department and ourselves.
Thank you, Honourable McLaughlin. Seconded by?
I saw the Honourable
Mantasha's hands first.
Chairperson, I rise to second the proposal for adoption of the report by Honourable Mashok.
The report
of
the committee?
Yes,
Chair. That is the quarterly report, second quarterly report. All right? That is now out of the way. I saw it. Is this Honourable Buyani?
Chair, because we have already agreed with the report, but I wanted to check because there are names here in terms of the appreciation. So the names that are not reflected there are not appreciated. That is, I just wanted to check. Because if there's an effort that has been done by a collective, you appreciate the entire effort by the collective. But if you begin to name people, then you separate others, then to me it's a confusing tension.
The reason we note staff is these are parliamentary staff. We thank the DTI as a collective, largely speaking, and the DG, etc. But the Chief Operating Officer, the Acting Ms. N. Matamela, the Parliamentary Liaison, these are those that directly assist us in this work, other than the Denia, the rest of the DTI. I think it is important to note all members of staff, and if there's anyone missing, well, that is corrected, because we have, I think at the time, we had two, now during this report we just had the one assistant, and it was yourself, Yvonne. So I think, Mr. Medima, you need to know that that's in. You probably took, is it in? I didn't see it. Oh, it's on the screen. All right. I really need to get to the minutes, please. Right, I've got 5 minutes. And I still want to address, can I just check with Mr. Medina, the material that we were being sent by DTI, which just was being photostated or whatever, regarding sugar, that's been done now, hasn't it? So it's going to be for distribution tomorrow. All right. Let's look at the minutes. The 12th of February. Only those who were present can adopt page 1. Page 2. Now on page 2, you will see, let's first adopt the minutes as a correct version, you know, correct in terms of what occurred before I raise something in the committee minutes. And then page 3. Right. Is that a true reflection of the minutes? And if it is, let's propose adoption. Honourable Tierker.
I propose, Chair, adoption of the minutes as it is.
Right.
Honourable Mantash.
I second, Chair.
Right.
And now you will see in the minutes on page 2, in terms of matters arising which has not been dealt with, committee business, an issue raised by the Honourable MacPherson and regarding a letter which I received that morning, that regarding the sugar issue. Indeed, You will recall we addressed this also the next day. I'm not sure if you were there at the next meeting, Honourable MacPherson, so I stand to correction. When the DG was addressing the matter, and we asked him to please respond to what it was that we had requested. And this goes on into the minutes of the 13th. And we will address it there as it is related to the 13th. Yes, Honourable MacPherson?
Can I respond to that then?
Yes, to the 13th.
Thank you. I just want to just, sure, yeah. I just want to...
We haven't done it yet. We just want to stop.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Honourable...
McLaubel?
Thanks, Chair. I know the minutes have been adopted, but I just want to make a recommendation for future minutes. The issue of Transnet that was being discussed, it's important that the minutes must reflect that it's not a new matter. The matter was, if people are coming as a follow-up, we need to be able, when we introduce the minutes, to indicate, to say, these people are coming as a follow-up, a follow-up of a meeting that took place on this particular day, and then the following decisions were made. Then they can talk about the business of the day. It's very important so that the interlinkages are there. Even when we're discussing with them, there was those other comrades or members of the committee that we're thinking is a new matter. It's just a matter to say going forward, not unpicking the minutes again. I just want to recommend that.
I think that's a constructive comment there, and I think in future it will be done, and it could easily have been done just before and again under the briefing where you say update, then you could have referred to the date, etc., taking this into account. But thank you, Honourable Ms. Lawball. We move to the minutes of Wednesday, the 13th of February, page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Can we first adopt, before we address the things, Honourable McLaubel?
Thank you, Honourable.
Honourable McLaubel seconded. Honourable Bouyani?
Chair, I second.
Now, you'll see, and the reason I put it here, Honourable MacPherson, is we took a specific decision here with regard to that, as you'll see. It's under the resolutions on page 4, all right? The committee resolved with respect to that. We needed X, we needed Y, and you can read it there. The DTI should provide a status report on the measures taken with respect to the challenges facing the sugar industry since the committee's last engagement. 2, the chairperson should engage with the relevant stakeholders in relation to the request and to provide a decision at the next meeting. One at a time, the DTI has responded, and when I got to Parliament, I was made aware of this. But there were certain technicalities, and staff have addressed this with the DTI. And when I say technicalities, equipment technicalities, not any other technicality. And I understand that this will be distributed tomorrow. Is this correct? Yes. Okay. With respect to the stakeholders, no, I was awaiting the response that I received from DTI, and I do intend awaiting that response. I have yet to really read this because I personally only arrived here just after 10 with the meeting in tow, and I couldn't really read the report. So as soon as I have read it, I'll certainly be in a better position to move forward on it. With respect to the cougar stuff, we've done that. It should provide a status report, and that was supposed to be provided by today. We haven't got that, have we? So can you please get hold of NCC to get that? All right. And then the DTI to provide a report of all entities on the current status of the vacancies in relation. We're still awaiting that, and we had hoped to have it today. Certainly, we hope we're going to have it by Thursday, Friday, so that we can distribute that on Tuesday itself. Honourable McLaubel?
On that one, I'm not sure, because I'm not sure where we are reading, but there's something I'm remembering. It was said even by yourself, that it's not vacancies, but it's more of capacity, including in the scarce skills.
Mm-hmm.
Because we wanted to be sure about the capacity capabilities going forward. Let them help us on that. Thank you.
Yes, so this is not in the nature of our regular question, but really we become more and more aware of the capacity with respect to the scarce skills. Not just, and the Group Chief Operating Officer is with us this morning, and I'm sure can ensure that that is dealt with effectively. Ms. Ntombi Matamela, I'm sure. Thank you. Honourable McPherson?
Thank you. I wanted to deal with the minutes of on page 4 and the resolution, what gave rise to those resolutions and what has subsequently come post those resolutions. I wrote to use the chairperson.
May I just indicate, Honourable McPherson, you were not here at the time, but I indicated I am leaving at 1 and adjourning the committee.
For 8 days, you've dodged and...
No, we haven't dodged.
You have, because you issued a press statement.
No, Honourable McPherson.
You issued a press statement saying that this issue is going to be dealt with.
No, I am going to adjourn the meeting, as I indicated.
You can't keep running away from this issue.
We are not running.
You are. You've ducked and dived for 8 days.
I have not even read the report from DTI.
But you've said
and
in your press statement...
And I intend reading it. Honourable Munter...
You said in your press statement that you're going to deal with this in the next parliament.
Chairperson...
That is dodging, ducking, and diving.
I think...
You can't communicate to me through the media. That is not fair, because I choose formal ways in which to communicate.
Chairperson, I take offence on
your
statement
to deal with it.
By Honourable...
We can't be lazy in our jobs.
I take offense, Chairperson, because we don't have a dodging Chairperson. The Chairperson is always on duty. That's an insult, McPherson. That's an insult, Comrade McPherson.
All right. I would like to adjourn this meeting. I gave an indication why. I was not aware there would be a Chair of Chairs meeting today. I only became aware of it when I arrived, and I intend going to that now. Thank you. Meeting adjourned till next week.
Shadow Minister, don't say that to our children. Shadow.
I'm going to go to the hospital.